You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. In just a few months, President-elect Barack Obama will be moving into the White House. If you heard his press conference today, you know he's facing his share of headaches, trying to manage two wars, a tanking stock market, a housing crisis, a deepening recession. So will he have time to talk about science priorities? That's what we're going to be talking about, because during the campaign, Obama pledged to double funding at the National Institutes of Health over the next 10 years. He also called for the gradual investment of $150 billion in clean energy technologies, like wind farms, plug-in cars, solar arrays in the Sun Belt. And over 60 U.S. Nobel Prize-winning scientists have flocked to support Obama during his campaign, saying he was the right candidate to juggle tough issues like climate change while ensuring an American edge in science and technology. Change has come to a certain degree, but will Obama be able to meet those soaring expectations for science? We heard a lot about Joe the plumber, but what about Joe the scientist or Joe the science teacher? What about the president's science advisor? Think about that. Who would you like to see as the science advisor? So for the rest of the hour, we're going to be taking your calls on what you think the biggest science challenge will be for the president-elect facing him immediately. Innovation, ocean health, stem cells, a new space program. Give us a call, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. We're also on Second Life, and we're Twittering, as we talked about this earlier. You can Twitter a conversation by tweeting your ideas at SciFritter. Just write the at sign followed by SCIFRITTER. My next guest has been running a vote on those topics on Wired.com, and we're going to talk about how the vote's going so far. Brandon Keim is a science writer for Wired and a freelance science and culture writer based in Brooklyn. Welcome to Science Friday.
Pleased to be here, Ira.
What kinds of things have been showing up on the webpage?
Well, the things that people seem to have cared most deeply about is energy. I'm actually surprised to find that climate is not as significant an issue as one might think, and I don't know if that's because our demographic is really more practical than anything else and just figures, all right, climate's an issue, but energy is really where we're going to solve it.
Well, I guess they're sort of interrelated, aren't they?
If you
go to green energy, then you might help abate the climate problem.
Well, there's really no way we can abate the climate problem without green energy.
Exactly. 1-800-989-8255. We want to know what you think would be some of the big issues. Okay, they said energy. What else are they talking about?
People also care very deeply about education, which is interesting to see because that is such a foundational aspect of science. Mm-hmm. They also care very much about research itself. And I believe Obama has actually promised not only to double the NIH budget, but also to double basic research funding at the Department of Defense and at the National Science Foundation, really just going across the board mm-hmm. with it. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that, that's a wonderful thing, because I think that it's difficult to sell science sometimes. And people will say, well, my God, you know, my mortgage is coming due and my 401k is falling apart, and why are we funding research on jellyfish? And of course, it turns out to be very important, and maybe that's what can drive the new economy.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Sybil in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Hi, Sybil.
Hello, Ira. Thanks for taking my call.
I think you're the first caller we've ever had from Tuscaloosa.
Well, probably, but I will tell you, I teach in the graduate school and the library science school, and my students in my class listen to your broadcast, either by podcast or live, and then we talk about it. I'm teaching information resources in science and technology, and I really think education is critical to the mm-hmm. future for our country as well as the disciplines.
Mm-hmm. And so you think that should be at the top of the list?
Well, I think, no, not necessarily at the top. I think the top priority for me is that we should balance the money that we're spending between basic and applied science, mm-hmm. because I think both of them are important. We also should emphasize the education of not only our scientists and engineers, but our teachers of science as well. And finally, for those librarians of the future, I would like to see some money put aside for teaching the librarians, because they're an important part in that whole process.
Very interesting. Those are great suggestions. As a teacher, do you see enough science teachers going through your university?
No, these students that I'm teaching actually are liberal arts students. So we spend a great deal of our time talking about the importance of science, how it fits into their daily lives, and how they can use it. And it's wonderful to see that they all catch on, even though they are history and English. It's a graduate program. They have their undergraduate degrees are in English and history a lot of times, but they're excited about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Science education. That was an interesting call.
Well, I just want to say it's really nice to hear science librarians get the shout-out that they deserve because they're taken for granted and they're actually very important in disseminating information among students. But there's no question that training science teachers is very important, that having science education not only to produce the engineers and the scientists we need, but also to have a scientifically literate populace is good.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of suggestions from our Twitter. Tweets are coming in. They're flooding in like crazy. Let's see if we can take some of the suggestions. Nick Benson says Obama's first priority must be keeping weaponized bacterial machine technology from falling into the wrong hands. Interesting suggestion.
It is an interesting suggestion and also quite relevant in light of what's happened with anthrax attacks since September 11, 2001. And I do think that when it comes to basic research funding in issues of national security or applied research also national security, that it's very important the research priorities are as sustainable, for lack of a better word, than they can be, that we not just say, okay, maybe in the future we'll be attacked with some terrible pathogen, so in order to defend against it, let's make it first. Because
Mama Loves writes, I hope Obama provides funding to find new cures to diseases and, oh, this is important, loosen stem cell restrictions.
I think that will happen as soon as he takes office. I don't think there's any question about that. We'll see the federal limitations on embryonic stem cell research that are now in place will be lifted, and those states that are funding stem cell research and have established that infrastructure are really going to benefit from that, as will people down the road.
Jeff in Cincinnati. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hello.
Hi there.
I just want to say I think that Michio Kaku would be a good choice for the advisor.
Science advisor, Michio Kaku.
Yes, he's a renowned quantum physicist and a futurist.
Right. Interesting.
He just has a great way, I believe, of getting pretty extensive scientific knowledge to a everyday person so that they can understand it.
Right. It could be that's great. There are a lot of popularizers of science, a lot of astronomers and physicists, you can mention, but you picked him out.
Yeah, because I believe that quantum physics is the future science that is going to revolutionize everything, and it'd be great to have somebody on him staff that would be so knowledgeable about it.
Well, thanks for calling. I could think of other names like Lawrence Krauss, who's also wrote the physics of Star Trek as a physicist. You could also have Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's another great popularizer of science.
Excellent one, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I'm blanking a little bit when it comes to popularizers of life science, but even Craig Venter, although he has a job to do. He would be a great guy to talk about biology.
Craig Venter, a lot of Nobel Prize biologists, who come to mind.
Very much. And the fellow who just won the Nobel Prize for his work on jellyfish, it would be great to get him out there explaining to people why basic research is so important.
Harold Varmus.
No question. I think he might actually, he is an Obama science advisor right now, so he's already in the inner circle.
Anthony Fauci also. He does such great work at NIH. You don't want to move him. Sometimes you don't want to move these people out of where they're doing their best stuff,
Yeah. No question.
Neil Lane was once the science advisor, I think, before. So he's also.
Is he really?
I think he was back in the day when they were taken pretty seriously.
I did not know that. Could I actually ask your permission also just to backtrack for a second on stem cells? Something that slipped my mind at the time is California has some very wonderful and progressive and experimental regulations in place on what to do with stem cell research once it's been funded and to make sure that research, the fruits of that research, becomes affordable to people. And I would love to see that done at the national level. I think stem cell research is fantastic, but let's make sure that we can actually afford to grow new hearts and new limbs and treat the diseases that it might.
Aaron in Moorhead City, North Carolina. Hi, welcome.
Hi, thanks for putting me through. I guess my comment is really just a follow-up on a statement just made, which is that, the most important thing that a president can do is really reestablishing the link between policy and science. There's so many great scientists out there, and the science tends to move a lot faster than policy does. And as we saw over the last 8 years, when you break that link, change is hard to come by. But I think if we start listening to the scientists, both in government and the private sector, we can move policy forward a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm. So linking policy and science again.
Yeah, exactly.
And you did you think you sort of lost trust in science and politics?
Well, I think there's just been a disconnect. There's been, you know, a lot of partisanship interjected into science that occurs at the federal level, and as soon as we start breaking down those partisan barriers, as the president-elect promises to do, I think we could start seeing a lot of progress on science that's already been completed and research that's already been done.
Okay, thanks for the call.
I'm very happy you brought that up. That's actually the question of linking science and policy, and also just having integrity in federal research is something that, you know, it didn't start with the Bush administration by any stretch, but in the last 8 years, we've seen the politicization of federal science and everything from climate change, of course, to the status of polar bears, to infant formula guidelines. I mean, it's just across the board. And then when it comes to the federal advisory committees that inform many of our decisions, we've seen independent experts often, you know, pushed aside in favor of people from the industries or who have conflicts of interest. And there's a lot of trust to be built there. And once that trust is built, then we can inform the policy with good science.
We have a tweet from Sick Days who writes, how about a broadband internet for everybody? Making sure everybody, for our nation, everybody has broadband internet coverage.
I won't complain, especially if I can pay less than I do now for my broadband access.
Another tweet from Jeannie Klo, who writes, do you think Obama will address the evolution argument? And if you do, how?
I don't think he'll need to at this point. I think that's, you know, something that's been front and center in the culture wars. And, of course, when Sarah Palin became the vice presidential candidate, it flared up again. But really, it's not going to be an issue outside of, you know, a handful of states where initiatives, you know, are put forth in order to make creationist make creationism a part of the curriculum to the extent that it will be, you know, placed alongside or to the extent that the theory of evolution will not be taught with the degree of certainty that it is now held in the scientific community. But I'm not too worried about it.
Talking about the challenges facing the president-elect this hour, Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Brandon Keim, who is science writer for Wired.com. He has an interesting column, an article up there about what challenges do you think that President-elect Obama should tackle as he enters his first term of office. Let's go to Brandon in Fort Collins. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi there.
Hi, my question is, it's a more general question. You know, if Obama is part of the Council of Foreign Relations, I feel like there's a general suppression of all science. And how will he attack those, longstanding borders?
Do you mean the Committee on Foreign Relations?
Because
there is a Council of Foreign Relations. It's a different group. Right. Okay. And I'm sorry, how will he attack the borders issues?
I guess it's kind of a more political question. Is he willing to start, with the Bindini device, for example? That has been proven, and yet we still pay for energy from a grid.
Ah. Oh, I see. Okay. Well, thanks for the call. Energy, that's a and power, that's got to be, you know, one of the great topics. And we talk also about investing in the infrastructure of the grid. And it's a good question about the grid.
Most definitely. And, you know, the survival of the planet aside, if anything's going to fuel an economic resurgence right now, it probably will be green tech. But I'll say that Obama, I believe he has pledged $15 billion per year for the next decade for clean energy and alternative energy sources. So I think he'll do it.
Nathan in Kalamazoo, are you in the car?
Yeah.
Quickly.
Hello?
Yes. Quickly.
Hi, I would like to recommend Francis Collins as the science advisor.
Francis, I'm going to let you go because of the car noise. Francis Collins is science advisor.
Fun suggestion. That might be a little tough when it comes to the issue of evolution, but quite apart from that, he is a fantastic geneticist and I think an extraordinary
population. He's able to separate his...
Separates it very well.
He separates his views about that.
I think there is nothing but respect for him within the scientific community. And actually, as someone who has managed to show that it's possible to, you know, hold deep and sincere religious beliefs and still believe in science and the methodology of science, that could be a good suggestion.
John from Santa Rosa.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Hi.
Hey, I've got a question. I've got a suggestion. It's kind of different, but my main concern is the space program. See, I think that it's been, you know, definitely ignored way too much. And if we end up facing, which eventually we will, a global crisis that ends up, you know, destroying most of the life on the Earth, I think that we need a global effort to get ourselves to a position where we could leave the Earth and actually sustain ourselves as an entity in the universe.
All right, so we need to really invest in getting off this planet because we're using it up.
Well, as a journalist, I would love to accompany the very first fleet that mm-hmm. escapes our failing Earth. But I think actually an important way of framing that argument is to point to the ways in which research on that in the short term can provide short-term benefits in terms of, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how are we going to grow plants in climates that are very extreme? How mm-hmm. are we going to, you know, meet these design challenges on other planets that really we could put it to good work on Earth while we still have time?
Nancy in Columbia, Maryland, you have the last word, Nancy.
Hi. I was wondering if you knew what Al Gore is doing currently and if there was been talk of him being on Barack Obama's energy team.
Good
or
question. Well, I think so far he hasn't come up in the conversation, but environmentals are, right?
Yeah, I've heard him, you know, mentioned at the very edges of the debate, but nobody has really talked about him as one of the leading candidates. But who knows? Maybe that's actually a sign that, you know, that he's a leading candidate.
Maybe he is because we don't talk about him.
Exactly.
He's under the radar. So very clever. That's how it works. Thank you, Brandon. Brandon Keim is science writer for Wired.com and a freelance science and culture writer based here in Brooklyn, New York. And you can check out his column there at Wired.com. That's all the time we have for today. You can also go to our website at ScienceFriday.com where we have the video pick of the week. Flora's got her video pick of the week. If you want to see a new way of looking at the map, the Electoral College map, we have a scientist describing how he's redrawn the map on ScienceFriday.com. We're very happy for you to go over there and take a look. Thanks for all the folks who tweeted today. We started it out. It was great. We had some great success with it. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarian Kim Oleski. Surf over to our website. You can also fritter us. That's our name, Sci Fritter. You can join a tweet conversation. It's still going on. That's at SCIFRITTER. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flato in New York.